Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone and those watching remotely. Glad that you're with us this morning. We have many that are visiting here today, and if you are our guest today, thank you for being here. You've been invited by someone who cared enough about you as a family member or a friend to say, would you come and be with me at worship this morning? I know we have some here from who've driven from Shakota. We have some from Oklahoma City and probably, I'm sure, other places. Wherever, however far you drove this morning, thank you. Thank you for coming and being with us. Some of you, I know, have a church home. We're just borrowing you for this morning. And some of you, if you don't have a church home, we want you to know you would be welcome here. We'd love to have you join us here as we try to follow God and please God and live in His grace and mercy. So we'll start this morning with our memory verse. We have a monthly memory verse that we are part of our devotionals. And so right now the memory verse is Philippians 4:6. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And we have these devotionals available on the table in the foyer. You can take one of those with you if you'd like. We have these available online, and so these have been something our families, whether you're a family of one or a family of 10, however large your family is, we've been doing these devotionals together. This morning, we're going to be in Luke chapter 10. And our text for this morning is the story of Mary and Martha. We have these two sisters, and they're going to have Jesus in their home, and we're going to see quite a dynamic play out between these two sisters. We don't have mention of Lazarus in this story. He may have been there. We're not sure. But Luke chapter 10, we're going to start with verse 38. And we read, now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. So this would be Jesus, you know, he had his apostles traveled with him and others. And so there will be a number of men and probably some women too in the home, and Martha's going to feed them. Now, this is her home, by the way. We don't have a lot of information in this passage, but we have enough that we can kind of glean some things. But this is Martha's home, and I don't know that they called ahead, you know, in the first century. So they get, this is probably Bethany is where they lived at one time anyway, and it's close to Jerusalem. It could have been they came to town and here we are. And so in the first century, hospitality was not only, it was very common and it was very gracious and it was important, but it was spur of the moment too. I don't know about you, but at my house, I mean, we'll have Thanksgiving at our house this year for Stephanie's family, and we will prepare for that. It won't be spur of the moment. But this may have been spur of the moment. We don't know. But can you imagine being Martha? We try to, you know, a prophet in the first century with the nation of Israel, with Jewish people, this would be a rock star. I mean, we try to imagine someone today, not only would they be popular, but they would be revered. Jesus, by his disciples, was revered, rightfully so. He was, at the very least, a rabbi. He was, some understood him to be a prophet, true, and some understood him to be Messiah, true. That would be the coming king. I mean, that's the Messiah was it. And you and I understand he's the actual Son of God himself. He was there in the beginning. So, but to imagine how much they thought of Jesus and how exciting this would be for Martha. You know, ladies, how exciting would this be to host? You try to think of someone you might admire or revere the most as a person. It's really, we really don't have an equivalent. So what an honor. And Martha, imagine that you're feeding, I don't know, maybe 20 men and women, and they're hungry, and they're going to eat when the food is ready. I mean, you've got work to do. And so I remember, you know, growing up, my mom loved to host, and as a preacher's family, we'd have a gospel meeting. We'd have a visiting preacher, and so mom would have him over probably for Sunday lunch. And I remember that, you know, the preacher and his wife are there, and they are our honored guest. And mom's busy cooking, and she cooked a lot often. I mean, that was what she did. That was kind of her superpower. So, but the thing about mom cooking, when she was in the kitchen, she had a goal. She wanted everything to come off hot at the same time. So she'd be busy. We wouldn't really help her in the kitchen. We'd be in the way. But when it's time to take up, as she would say, that means we take it out of the pots and pans and we put it into the serving bowls. And it's time to take up. Now it's all hands on deck because it's all happening at once. And there's bread in the oven that's going to burn if we don't time this right. And we get it on we got to have all the things that go under the hot bowls on the table so we don't burn the table. Now, everything's hot. Everything's happening. And mom was stressed. Cooking stressed her because she wanted it a certain way. She loved the meal. Mom loved to eat. I come by that naturally. She liked, more than eating, she liked to watch other people eat. She loved hosting. And I didn't know till later, but it really stressed mom. I didn't know till later. There was a Thanksgiving when I was a young adult, a Thanksgiving that one member of our family suggested to mom because she gets so stressed out when she's cooking. They suggested, hey, what about this year for Thanksgiving we do different? You know, I can't remember what it was, what dumb thing they said. It was dumb. I know it's dumb now, but they, you know, whether it was, we'll just go out to eat or get the food and bring it in or everybody, I don't know what they said. But my goodness, that day I learned mom actually likes to cook. She likes to host, but I never knew it because she looked so stressed. And that's how Martha looked. Martha was stressed. So verse 39, let's read on. Now we see she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. So now we have these siblings. It's Martha's home. We don't know that Martha was the older sister, but I really think she was. It is her home. She definitely seems the more responsible one. And we have a comparable passage in John 11, another event that happens close to about a week before the crucifixion. And that's where Mary anoints Jesus' feet with the costly ointment and wipes it with her hair. And at that event in John 11, Martha is cooking. She's also preparing food then. But now we have Mary. And Mary's at Jesus' feet. So just, you know, if you're the oldest child, if you're an oldest sibling, oldest child, raise your hand. All the oldest child, all the responsible people, raise your hand. Thank you. Oldest children, responsible, right? Used to getting things done. Used to having it fall on you. If somebody was going to answer for it for the children, it was going to be you because you're the oldest. And if you're sorry to leave out the middles, you're used to this. Sorry about you. You're the peacemakers. We appreciate you. You can play for both teams. You're ambidextrous. So the babies, raise your hand. The youngest siblings. All right, the babies. We're not used to responsibility, by the way. When I was growing up, mom was the planner. And mom had all the planning covered. And then if she needed any help planning, there was dad. And if it ever got past dad, I mean, if it ever got so bad that they needed kids' help, there's our oldest brother. There's my sister, who's the only girl, only daughter and only responsible one of us kids. My brother was the oldest, but there was only one mature. Anyway, that's my sister. We would try to make a pact with her when we were home alone and we'd get in trouble, my brother and I, and we'd make a pact. Now listen, nobody's going to tell, right? We'd try to make an alliance. She would never do it. She didn't do anything wrong. She's like, I'm telling. I don't care. Responsibility never made it to me. Right? It's all taken care of. Nobody asked Elliot, what do you think we ought to do? I'm just told what to do. So anyway, I see a little glimpse at the responsible one and then the one who's not worried about things. And that's Mary. But what we do know, she's sitting at Jesus' feet. Now, I want to point out, in the first century, that's where students learned. They learned, Paul said he learned at the feet of Gamaliel. Students would sit and the teacher might be standing. And so she's probably with the apostles. The men, she may be the only woman at Jesus' feet. And I want you to notice what Jesus does with Mary in contrast to a first century view of women. In the first century, women were commonly viewed as being inferior to men, both intellectually and spiritually. And Mary probably stands out right now, because the women in this home with Martha are probably, if there are any other women there, they're probably helping Martha prepare the meal. But I want to jump and chase a rabbit just a second and go to Luke. Just a couple chapters before, Luke 8:1 says, "Soon afterward he went on through cities and villages proclaiming and bringing the good news of the kingdom of God, and the 12 were with him." That's the 12 apostles. "And also some women who had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities. Mary called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had gone out, and Joanna, the wife of Chuza, Herod's household manager, and Susanna, and many others who provided for them." Who's them? That's the apostles and Jesus. "Provided for them out of their means." These women were crucial to Jesus' ministry. And women have been crucial to the church ever since. And women are crucial in this church family right here. You can probably trace your faith back to some godly woman. Many of us, probably most, have a godly woman, possibly your mother, grandmother, a Sunday school teacher, who had a powerful godly influence on you because of her faith that she was living out in service. And I just want to highlight that, and we'll see what Jesus does with this, because Mary is doing what would be unnatural for ladies at that time in that situation. All right, so let's go on. Martha, what's she doing? She's distracted with much serving. Now, remember, this is her house. It's her invitation. She's the hostess. She has responsibility. The word distracted here is from a Greek word. It means to draw from around, to be driven around mentally. We would say like a chicken with her head cut off. That's how we would say. She's distracted. You ever get distracted? When I was 16, my first job was in Shakota at a little grocery store. We had 6 aisles. And in this grocery store, the store was called Weddle's. And there was a number of them. We were one of a few. And the owner, we would never see the owner, but the manager was my friend's father, my good friend's father, and he worked there too. So he and I spent quite a bit of time working there. We were not mature, mind you, at 16, 17 years old. And our job was sackers. You know, people would check out, would bag their groceries and carry them out and put them in their car. That's how long ago this was. And we started selling these little, anyway, we did some work and we had a good time, but we started selling these little whistles. And not like a regular whistle, but you would blow on it and it would make a sound. Woo! It would go up high, make a sound, kind of come down. And we started selling these. So I remember one day we're in the back, just back behind the stainless steel looking doors that go to the back of the store. We're just beyond those in the back. And we're playing with those whistles. And my friend, the manager's son, my friend, he's got it going. And in comes Mr. Weddle, the owner, comes through the door. He's tall, too. I don't know what he sounds like because he didn't say anything. He came in, and my friend had this whistle going, and it went, whoo! And he sucked the air in and made it stop, took it out of his mouth. I didn't say anything because I didn't know what to say. He blurts out, "Look what we sell." Nothing else was said. We put our heads down and went back and did some work. Do you ever wonder if God looks down on us and all the things that we're doing, all the things that we're chasing, all the little fun we're having? And does God look down on us and see our immaturity? What we should be about, what we should be focused on. Jesus told a parable about it, the sower and the seed, and the seed that falls among the thorns. They're like those who hear, but as they go on their way, they're choked by three things. Cares, that's worries. It's human to worry, but we have to manage that properly. Trust in Jesus. The more we think about Jesus, the less we worry. The more we think about our problems, the less we trust, and the more we worry. But some of your natural worriers, the cares of this world, the riches. Anybody working hard, got big plans? Man, I'm about the grind. I'm hustling right now because I've got big plans with big money. I'm chasing it. Or pleasures of life, just being me, just doing what I like to do. And their fruit does not mature. It doesn't mature. Well, look at Martha. She went up to Jesus. She said, "Lord, do you not care?" I don't know how she said it, but I think it might have sounded like this. I've had this kind of thing said to me before. "Do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me." She goes to Jesus fully expecting, number one, she's a little irritated with Jesus, evidently. Do you not care? She's not just criticizing Mary. She's on Jesus a little bit. Do you not care? Frustrated. You ever get frustrated with how things are going? How life is? You're trying to do what you're trying to do and somebody's not cooperating. Somebody's in your way. They're not helping. People are in. You ever get frustrated driving? And Martha, she's frustrated. She's doing all this work and nobody's helping. You ever feel that way? Can I not trust anyone? Can I not count on anyone? Frustrated. The Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha." And notice, this answer is a gentle answer. Now, she's fired up. And Jesus, in his wisdom, doesn't even address that she's really kind of out of line here with him. She's being rude to him. But he doesn't address that. Sidesteps that altogether. She's up here in her energy. And Jesus comes down here. "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things." That's more than just the meal, isn't it? I mean, Jesus reads through this moment in time and says, "Martha, this is kind of like in your life, you worry about a lot. Troubled about many things. But one thing is necessary. And Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her." One thing is necessary. One thing is important. One thing is needed. One thing. Jesus said, "I'm not going to take that from her." What if Martha had stopped preparing the meal and come and sat down with Mary at Jesus' feet? What would have happened? What would Jesus have said? And what if someone else had said, "Are we not going to eat?" Don't you think Jesus would say, "We can eat in a minute. We'll eat when we eat. We're doing something important here. Because this is eternal stuff. We live our lives with so many distractions. And the question I want you to leave today with is, am I distracted from Jesus or am I devoted to Jesus? Am I distracted from Jesus or am I devoted to Jesus? and evaluate things in your life by where do they, how do they affect me with that? Are they distracting me from Jesus, or are they helping me to be devoted more to Jesus? This world needs more Jesus, doesn't it? This world needs more Jesus. Our children need more Jesus. You and I need more Jesus. And from, and I'll tell you, from the most spiritual among us, from a Homer Weathers or a Norma Shinnerer on down, all the way down, all the way to, if you're here and you really didn't even, this wasn't really, you really didn't even want to be here, maybe still are not sure about this stuff. You're not sure if this is for you. You're not sure you can do this Christian stuff. You're not sure that God loves you, or that he can forgive you, or that he wants you, or that any group of Christians would want you. You need more Jesus. You need more Jesus. His arms are open, and our arms are open. We all need more Jesus. I remember one time talking to a guy I went to church with, and I was encouraging him to come to a small group on Sunday night. He was there Sunday mornings often, and I was inviting him to a small group. You know, so we meet Sunday nights, you know, 6 o'clock, whatever time it was. His answer to me really startled me. He was very honest. He wasn't rude. He was very frank. He said, "So here's the deal. Here's how I look at it. I get what I need Sunday morning. And Sunday morning, that's what I need. I got what? I get all I need Sunday morning." And what he didn't realize is more Jesus is always what you need. We don't get too much Jesus, because we chase happiness in this world. We're trying to chase being happy that never fulfills, that always disappoints, that always lets us down. We're chasing our way. We're trying to make paradise on earth our way. And what we don't realize is Jesus is trying to give us a joy that never disappoints. He's trying to give us peace that is always there. He's trying to give us hope for a future, for eternity. I mean, more Jesus is the answer. I want you to know that. So what I'm doing in life, is it distracting me from Jesus, or is it helping me to be devoted to Jesus? We're going to close with a song about Jesus. And if you're here this morning, if you need prayers, you want somebody to pray with you, ask us. Ask someone. If you have challenges in life and what you need is more prayer, maybe you have some struggles to get past, to walk with Jesus, talk to us. We're going to sing this song. If you'll come during the song, we'll all stop and pray for you. Maybe there's one who's never, you've never given your life to Christ. You're not a Christian. And if you were to stand before God in judgment today, you're not sure God would say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." He wouldn't, because you've never given your life to him to be saved. Or maybe you've been saved, but would God say, "Good and faithful servant, enter in to heaven"? Or would he say, "Depart from me, I never knew you"? Someday we'll all stand and we'll hear God's verdict. And that's what we're about. And so if we can help you with that, let us help you. If you'll come while we stand and sing.
In Christ alone.